Welcome to New World Notes, a series that explores the gap between the America we want and the America they're trying to make us settle for, and how we the people can reestablish our commonwealth and reclaim our democracy. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. In class today, we'll be studying that rare bird, Chicken Hawkus americanus. The striking thing about the alpha male chicken hawks, apart from their gorgeous yellow plumage, is that their enthusiasm for military bombings, shootings, raping, exploding, and crushing of rival birds is inversely proportional to their own experience of the same. Somehow, they are able to persuade fledglings from other nests to do this grisly work for them. Apology to grizzlies. We'll explore some interesting variants of this strange bird. Chicken Hawkus presidentus W., Chicken Hawkus wolfowitzium, and the oddest of all, now thankfully extinct, that species that disguises itself as a bald eagle, Chicken Hawkus Marion Morrisonium Burbank. In addition to my fascinating lecture, we'll have a reading of Professor Robert Fisk, a recording of Dr. John Pilger, and two rousing songs suitable to us bird brains of all ages. May I ask the lacrosse team to turn off their Nintendo Game Boys and the Sisters of Kappa Delta to turn off their cell phones? Finally, may I ask the visiting English professors to leave the Frisky Cheerleaders website when your download is completed and attend to the fascinating PowerPoint presentation you see on the large screen. Thank you, God bless, and please stay tuned. I'm not at all well this week. I think I'm suffering from a bad case of Monica Lewinsky on the brain, which is one of several things my so-called health insurance company will not pay for, along with sickness, injury, the natural effects of aging, and any malady involving an internal organ. To their credit, they do cover exorcism and dental floss, though there's a pretty stiff copay if you want mint-flavored. But as you can tell, I've been thinking a lot about Monica. A couple weeks ago, I even made an appeal to her over the air to come back east and help bring about a little much-needed regime change here. I think we can learn a bit about contemporary America by looking at the Bill and Monica scandal. Now, I know this did get some press coverage, unlike, say, the Miami police riot of a couple years ago, but there hasn't been a lot of reflection on what it all adds up to. One important question it brings up is, well, what do you have to do to get impeached these days? Andrew Johnson was impeached, but not removed from office. Richard Nixon resigned just on the verge of being impeached. William Jefferson Clinton was impeached, but not removed from office. And George Bush is going to walk out of office a free man. What principle is at work here? One thing that strikes me about the whole sordid affair was there's a certain amount of shock and outrage at Clinton's behavior. And to their great credit, I think the majority of the American people did not feel any great amount of shock and outrage. They had plenty of real things to be shocked and outraged about. But all the right-wing pundits did, unanimous, and most of the House of Representatives. And the constant drumbeat of ginned-up shock and outrage, it had its effect on a number of the more impressionable people of our fellow citizens. And I remember people quoting what they'd heard seven times on TV, saying, "But she's young enough to be his daughter. She's young enough to be his daughter." And the fact that they were all repeating the exact same phrase suggests there was a certain amount of planning on getting this point of view across, probably originating with Richard Mellon Scaife and then passing down through Rush Limbaugh and finally out the TV set into the minds of the sort of person who minds fill up easily, young enough to be his daughter. Imagine a rich, powerful, late middle-aged man having an affair with a young woman young enough to be his daughter. It's outrageous. Outrage. Never happened before. Do you recall the death of Nelson Rockefeller some years back? When Nelson Rockefeller died, he was in bed with a charming young lady named Megan something or other. Now, Megan was young enough to be Nelson Rockefeller's granddaughter. Where was the shock and outrage? Where was Rush Limbaugh banging on his table talking about Sodom and Gomorrah? But in Clinton's case, they did manage to convince a significant minority of citizens to feel, or at least to spout, outrage. She's young enough to be his daughter. She's young enough to be his daughter. Another phrase that got recited by the same people over and over again was, "He lied to us. He lied to us." Imagine that. Imagine that. The president lied to us about whether or not he had sex with Monica Lewinsky. Or was he lying about some other sex? I don't even remember. What was he charged with exactly? What was he indicted for? Was it fiddling around with Monica? Was it some other types of sex with some other types of women? Was it lying about whether or not he had sex with Paula Jones? I don't know. Nobody remembers. It doesn't matter. The important thing is he was almost driven out of office for basically, truth be told, allowing a real health care reform bill to be introduced. There's one other phrase that was repeated again and again ad nauseum by all the same people at an earlier date, though, about Clinton, which was, "He's a draft dodger. That draft dodger. That no good draft dodger." People I knew were saying that too. He's a draft dodger. Have you heard that in the past 7 years? Anybody referring to any administration official currently ever use the phrase, "He's a draft dodger"? Now, my personal opinion of draft dodgers is pretty much the same as my personal opinion of adults who have consensual sex, whether or not one of them is young enough to be the child of the other. That is, God bless them and more power to them. But there is something that is similar to a draft dodger, but very, very bad. And that is a chicken hawk. And a chicken hawk is a draft dodger, or person who, for whatever reason, has not served in the military, who encourages more wars in which other people's children will be off serving and getting killed and killing others, coming back with PTSD. There are a certain number of chicken hawks, by that definition, who have served in the Bush administration since 2001. One may or may not classify the president as a chicken hawk. He is not without military experience, having served several hours in the Texas Air National Guard. But among those who are rabidly encouraging of, and in many cases helped to plan and bring about, the bloody wars in the Middle East we are now fighting, are the following current and former administration officials. Vice President Dick Five Deferments Cheney, as in, "I had other priorities," then go to the Vietnam. White House Chief of Staff Joshua Bolton, former White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card, former Deputy White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove, convicted former Vice Presidential Chief of Staff I. Lewis Scooter Libby, former Office of Management and Budget Director Rob Portman, Secretary of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff, the man who made New Orleans what it is today, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, former U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft, former Deputy National Security Advisor Elliot Abrams, former Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Douglas Feith, former Assistant Secretary of Defense Richard Perle. About half of these were not only influential militarists doing everything they could to encourage the Iraq War, the Afghanistan War, and the continuation of both. They were signatories or members of PNAC, the Project for the New American Century, which basically, written in the 1990s, I believe, planned and laid out the theoretical justifications for America throwing its weight around all over the world, causing wars of aggression, changing regimes here and there, and so forth. I owe this list to a really interesting organization called knowyourpresident.org. You can find on the web, knowyourpresident.org. And they have a long, long, long list. I've just picked out the administration officials, to say nothing of congressional leaders, Republican aspirants for the presidency. Then there's a whole bunch of pro-war senators, governors, and other big shots. And, of course, about 24 pro-war pundits and other media figures, all chicken hawks, including Michael Reagan, George Will, Chris Matthews, Bill O'Reilly, Paul Guigeau, Sean Hannity, Britt Hume, Neil Bortz, Roger Ailes, the Reverend Jerry Falwell, Gary Bauer, Bill Bennett, Pat Buchanan, Rush Limbaugh, David Limbaugh, Bill Kristol, Michael Medved, Ralph Reed, Michael Savage, Toby Keith, Lee Greenwood, Ann Coulter, and put on this list anyway, as honorable mention, the greatest, most influential chicken hawk ever, John Wayne. And to a rogues gallery like the one I have just recited, what can we do but offer up a song?
He gets up every morning and checks the world situation. Gotta keep in touch, he's the leader of our nation. The news is good and getting better by the day. Congress rolled over, let him have his way. Radio is filled with lots of war talk. Oh, it's a fine, fine time to be a chicken hawk. Now, if you're not already familiar with this word, chicken hawk refers to a special kind of bird. It's the kind that starts wars, though he's never had to go. He's never fired a shot, 'cause his daddy had some dough. He talks the talk while someone else walks the walk. That's the definition of a chicken hawk. Chicken hawk number two's timing was good. His wife had a baby, doing everything they could to avoid active service. Like chicken hawk number one, he lived to help start a war in 1991. Along the way, he became a millionaire. You know where money meets blood, you'll find chicken hawks there. There's a big mouth roly-poly talk show host. He had a chance to fight many years ago, but the big mouth man just couldn't enlist. His doctor wrote a note about some anal cysts, and now that same draft dodger wants to bomb Iraq. He's a big mouth roly-poly chicken hawk. Now you could say that chicken hawks are really on a roll, or you could say that chicken hawks are out of control, 'cause it's windfall profits for themselves, and to hell with peace and everybody else. 'Cause when the chicken hawks win, the rest of us lose, and everybody gets the chicken hawk blues. Sure shoot, chicken hawk blues.
I should mention that this lovely laundry list of chicken hawks includes 8 men who are currently serving in the U.S. Senate, including that most bellicose, warmongering of them all, a man who's working tirelessly night and day to get Iran bombed and bomb, 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 bomb Iran McCain elected president, Connecticut's very own independent Republican, Joseph Lieberman. Congratulations, Joe. You're in select company. Even Senator Dodd did not make the cut. So, if there's anything worse than a draft dodger, it's a chicken hawk. And if there's anything worse than a chicken hawk, it's a chicken hawk who starts a war so he can go around saying, "I'm a wartime president," and use that as an excuse for gutting the Constitution. And if there's anything worse than that, it's all of the above who thinks he's the modern-day incarnation of Churchill. This is driving Middle Eastern correspondent Robert Fisk very close to the deep end at this point, when both Bush and former Prime Minister Tony Blair are referring to themselves as parallel to Churchill and the aggression in Iraq as similar to World War II. Unlike the two politicians, Fisk, in fact, knows a great deal about Churchill. In fact, knows a great deal about the Middle East in addition, and he has a hard time seeing the parallels. Here's a wonderful piece he wrote. It was published in March in Counterpunch magazine called The Hell Disaster of Iraq, or The Little Men and the Inferno. 5 years on, and we still have not learned. 5 years of catastrophe in Iraq. And I think of Churchill, who in the end called Palestine a hell disaster. As the Americans came storming up Iraq in 2003, their cruise missiles hissing toward 100 Iraqi towns and cities, I would sit in my filthy room in the Baghdad Palestine Hotel, unable to sleep for the thunder of explosions, and I'd root through the books I brought to fill the dark, dangerous hours, along with a file of newspaper clippings. One was a long rant by Pat Buchanan, written 5 months earlier, and still today I feel its power and its prescience and its absolute historical honesty. Here is Fisk quoting Buchanan. With our MacArthur Regency in Baghdad, Pax Americana will reach apogee. But then the tide recedes, for the one endeavor at which Islamic people excel is expelling imperial powers by terror or guerrilla war. They drove the Brits out of Palestine and Aden, the French out of Algeria, the Russians out of Afghanistan, the Americans out of Somalia and Beirut, the Israelis out of Lebanon. We have started up the road to empire, and over the next hill we will meet those who went before. The only lesson we learn from history is that we do not learn from history. End quote. Fisk continues, how easily the little men took us into the inferno, with no knowledge of, or at least no interest in, history. None of them read of the 1920 Iraqi insurgency against British occupation, nor of Churchill's brusque and brutal settlement of Iraq the following year. On our historical radars, not even Crassus appeared, the Roman general who set forth to destroy Mesopotamia. At a spot in the desert near the Euphrates River, the Parthians, ancestor of present-day Iraqi insurgents, annihilated the Roman legions, chopped off Crassus's head, and sent it back to Rome filled with gold. Today they would have videotaped his beheading. These little men who took us to war 5 years ago now prove that they have learned nothing. Anthony Blair, as we should always have called this small-town lawyer, should be facing trial for his mendacity. Instead, he now presumes to bring peace to an Arab-Israeli conflict that he has done so much to exacerbate. There is a transitory cardboard structure to our decision-making. The great issues that face us, be they of Iraq or Afghanistan, the U.S. economy or global warming, planned invasions or, quote, terrorism, unquote, are discussed around television schedules and press conferences. Will the first air raids on Iraq hit primetime television in the United States? Mercifully, yes. Will the first U.S. troops in Baghdad appear on the breakfast show? Of course. Will Saddam's capture be announced by Bush and Blair simultaneously? In the Second World War, when the British were retreating to Dunkirk, Churchill announced that the Germans had, quote, penetrated deeply and spread alarm and confusion in their tracks, unquote. Why didn't Bush or Blair tell us this when the Iraqi insurgents began to assault the Western occupation forces? They were too busy telling us that things were getting better, that the rebels were mere dead-enders. On 17 June 1940, Churchill told the people of Britain, the news from France is very bad, and I grieve for the gallant French people who have fallen into this terrible misfortune. Why didn't Blair or Bush tell us the news from Iraq was very bad, and that they grieved? Even just a few tears for a minute or so for the Iraqis. For these were the men who had the temerity, the sheer unadulterated gall, to dress themselves up as Churchill. Heroes who would stage a rerun of the Second World War. The BBC dutifully called the U.S. and British invaders the Allies, and they painted Saddam's regime as the Third Reich. Of course, when I was at school, our leaders, Attlee, Churchill, Eden, McMillan, or Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy in the United States, had real experience of real war. Not a single Western leader today has any first-hand experience of conflict. Today, the most bloodthirsty of American statesmen, Bush and Cheney, Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz, have either never heard a shot fired in anger or have ensured that they do not have to fight for their country when they had a chance to do so. No wonder Hollywood titles like Shock and Awe appeal to the White House. Movies are their only experience of human conflict. The same goes for Blair and Brown, that is, former Prime Minister Tony Blair and current Prime Minister Gordon Brown. Yet our political midgets insist on making comparisons with the Second World War. All this is a distraction from the awful truth in Buchanan's warning. We have dispatched our armies into the land of Islam. We have done so with the sole encouragement of Israel, whose own false intelligence to Iraq, given to us, has been discreetly forgotten by our masters. America's massive military prestige has been irreparably diminished, and there are now 22 times as many Western troops in the Muslim world as there were at the time of the 11th and 12th century Crusades. We must ask what we were doing. Are we there for oil? For democracy? For Israel? For fear of weapons of mass destruction? Or for fear of Islam? I will hazard a terrible guess that we have lost Afghanistan as surely as we have lost Iraq, and as surely as we are going to lose, quote-unquote, Pakistan. It is our presence, our power, our arrogance, our refusal to learn from history, and our terror, yes, our terror of Islam, that is leading us into the abyss. And until we learn to leave these Muslim peoples alone, our catastrophe in the Middle East will only become graver. There is no connection between Islam and terror, but there is a connection between our occupation of Muslim lands and our terror. It is not too complicated an equation, and it doesn't need a public inquiry to get right. So writes Robert Fisk a couple months ago, somewhat condensed and edited for radio by yours truly. If you care to read the original, check out the March 19th, 2008 issue of Counterpunch online. We cannot end this program without at least a brief tribute to that pioneering chicken hawk, the man who put cheese back in machismo, Marion Morrison, born 101 years ago in 1907, better known by his phony name, John Wayne. Here's Australian journalist and filmmaker John Pilger with a brief discussion of Wayne given recently.
I wasn't going to mention the Green Berets when I sat down to write this. Until I read the other day that John Wayne was the most influential movie star who ever lived. I saw the Green Berets starring John Wayne on a Saturday night in 1968 in Montgomery, Alabama. I was down there to interview the then infamous governor, George Wallace. And I'd just come back from Vietnam and I couldn't believe how absurd this movie was. So I laughed out loud. I laughed and laughed. And it wasn't long before the atmosphere around me grew very cold. My companion, who'd been a freedom rider in the South, whispered, "Let's get the hell out of here and run like hell." Well, we were chased all the way back to our hotel. But I doubt if any of my pursuers were aware that John Wayne, their hero, had lied so that he wouldn't have to fight in World War II. And yet the phony role model of Wayne sent thousands of young Americans to their deaths in Vietnam with the notable exceptions of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney.
Well, my son asked me today, is this another Vietnam? I said, son, you know, it's go ask your mom. It brought back such precious memories of my days in business school, my favorite stool. Then my wife said, hey, I'm worried, 'cause they're starting to deploy. I said, honey, don't be silly, we'll send someone else's boy, 'cause we all make sacrifices, and in a war, that's what the poor people are for. I said, fight on for freedom's sake, long as I don't shake and bake.
Chicken hawk.
Call me a chicken hawk.
Chicken hawk.
Proud to be a chicken hawk. A loyal armchair jock. Let's check that Lockheed stock. I didn't walk the walk, but I could talk the talk. Bawk, 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 bawk. Just because you might have seen some action there on the front line, don't insult the guys who served their country here on the back nine. I was gung-ho for gun and ho, but I just had other priorities, like feeling more at ease. I said, bomb them to hell, but I'd rather not be Kentucky Fried.
Chicken hawk.
Call me a chicken hawk.
Chicken hawk.
Proud to be a chicken hawk. Watch while I bring Demac, recede to all Iraq. I didn't walk the walk, but I can talk the talk. Bawk, 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 bawk. Why did the chicken cross the road? Well, I'll tell you, part. The chicken crossed the road to join the Texas Air National Guard. Roll call, Bush, bawk. Card, bawk. Roll, bawk. Ashcroft, bawk. Rumsfeld, bah! Wolfowitz, bah! Pearl, bah! Cheney,
don't buck yourself.
O'Reilly, Hannity, Hume,
buck, buck, buck.
Bennett, Crystal, Limbaugh, Hastert, Gingrich, Lott, DeLay, buck,
buck, buck, buck, buck, buck, buck, buck.
Chicken hawk.
Call me a chicken hawk.
Chicken hawk.
Proud to be a chicken hawk. Watch while I bring them up. Receive to all in back. I didn't walk the walk, but I could talk the talk.
Bawk, 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 bawk.
Let me make this perfectly clear. The buck stops here.
Roy Zimmerman with his immortal Chicken Hawk. And the song we heard earlier was Peter Dyer's Chicken Hawk Blues. Thank you for attending this lecture of Biology 204, Rare Birds of North America. The all-too-brief talk by John Pilger is courtesy of democracynow.org. New World Notes is produced at WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of anyone even remotely connected with this station, though Leo the janitor says some of the music he likes. And their expression is protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Your comments and suggestions are most welcome. Write to Kenneth Doust, New World Notes, WWUH-FM, University of Hartford, 200 Bloomfield Avenue, West Hartford, 06117. Or email me at kdoust, that's K-D-O-W-S-T. At hotmail.com. Until next week, here's wishing you a good week, illegitimi non carborundum, and in the immortal words of Chief Halftown, Ista sa sasaway.